You guys, it's Andy's girls. Ooh, that was a little extra soft, not as zesty as normal. It's episode, do you know, I actually think I do know the number. It's 519. Thank you so much to me for doing my version of girl math. And I'm recording this in Rhode Island. I'm back here seeing some family and per usual, seemingly of late, transitioning out of my European lifestyle for 2 weeks. It took me a couple days to watch Beverly Hills just because I had some plans in New York and then some things to do here in Rhode Island. And I was honestly appreciative for a little bit of the distance because I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to feel about the episode itself. It seemed to be that on social, people have been putting a lot of really negative critiques about the episode, which honestly, having not yet watched it, I sort of felt like in advance that I tended to agree, built around the idea of like, we're not getting information that we deserve. And then I watched the episode itself and I felt like there was a different positioning in the episode than the ways I've seen other reunions edited for a couple reasons. Number one, something was very odd and choppy about the edit. And I don't know how else to put it, except that silence and a little bit of a quiet and a pause has been used to great effect on prior, you know, classic episodes of Housewives, shall we say, and also post-production, you know, reunion episodes where there's this kind of extended pause or extended discomfort and awkwardness, which helps create tension. It helps with storytelling. Sometimes that's either an extension of the reaction of the cast to a particularly odd or potentially cringe, tense moment, or also a little bit of a way to placate the audience of like a wink from the editor saying, listen, you might not hear the reaction that you're looking for from the cast, but we're giving that to you in the silence. And I watched the episode and honestly, it feels like it's been years since I've seen part one and two, but I honestly kind of do want to rewatch them because during part three, I just felt like the edit was so choppy that there were things being said that we weren't hearing. So it was cutting to like what was ostensibly supposed to be a continuation of some sort of argument or conversation, awkwardness or something. And instead it would just kind of cut to like Dorit giving eyes, Erica giving eyes, Andy sort of shrugging or moving on, where it felt like, wait a second, we were getting to a climax here. We were climbing a mountain towards something and then all of a sudden it shifted. And a part of those edits seemed to be trying to engage us in like, ooh, the cast is feeling a certain way. We're seeing Erica's reaction. We're seeing Dorit's, but in or Garcelle's. But instead, I just felt a little, not that I felt empty, but I genuinely felt a little confused as to what was happening that we weren't able to watch. And I know that there has been certainly an argument that I myself have agreed with on prior episodes of like, Kyle isn't telling us what is going on. And Kyle's reaction, obviously, in part three was to say, it's none of your business. I think that there was some sort of agreement with Kyle and production that when it came to Kyle sharing vulnerability, she would seemingly take one for the team and having Kathy on the couch to discuss their relationship. Obviously an easier lift this season than last, because while they did need to talk about some awkwardness, they seem to be doing well, they're supporting each other, whatever else, instead of having Mauricio there. One could argue even instead of having Denise there, but maybe Denise was not as big of a part of this season, aside from, you know, just a miraculous dinner party from hell episode. And I think it's an interesting take to see when you think about the fact that that was something that Kyle utilized during the season itself. I can't stop thinking about that scene, which we saw a flashback to in this episode when Kyle was talking to Kim. And Kim was referencing, how is this going to work at my daughter's wedding? You know, how is this going to work with our family structure with someone there? And I don't know what your relationship with that person is, ostensibly referencing Mauricio. And Kyle pivoted from that and said, oh, Kathy, XYZ, yada, 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 repositioning the way that she was going to talk about a tense relationship, which isn't to say that she didn't have some awkwardness to work through with Kathy. I think that sort of ebbs and flows in the dynamics of their relationship, but I do not think that's who Kim was referencing. And I think Kyle also understood that she was talking about Mo. And there's, you know, a clip that friend of the pod who's been on, I think AG Classic, but definitely AG Patreon, Eliza, also known as Face Reality 16, posted a clip of Andy talking to Jen Aiden at a prior New Jersey reunion. And what Eliza was saying, and I thought really well, was like, here is a conversation that Andy is having with a cast member who's upset about the way her marriage has been exposed on reality TV. And Andy's response to her during the reunion was like, why go on reality TV if you have something to hide? It's sort of an impossible circumstance. And then you look at the reunion couch. I mean, Tom Girardi is a separate conversation, one I just had on AG with absolute legal queen Emily D. Baker. But did we see that same kind of a pressure applied? And I have to be honest in saying I didn't. It felt like Andy was treating Kyle with care. And I'm not necessarily going to criticize that, except I do think, because I think we have to sort of acknowledge, if I'm comparing the two, Kyle and Jen Aiden, obviously Andy is going to have a different relationship with someone who started, you know, the beginning, helped create Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, has been on the show without a pause for 13 seasons, has a relationship with, has been a vital part, I think, of the Housewives franchise, has a lot of power, a lot of value to the network and to Peacock as well. And so I don't want to say apples to apples. I understand why his responses and relationships with the women might be different. The way he communicates with an OG, for example, is probably going to be different from like someone who joins mid or in the later half of a franchise's current existing life. That being said, I think that there is a way he could have approached the conversation with Kyle that didn't depend as much on those pauses and on that quiet. It felt like, as an audience member, either we were supposed to feel comfortable existing in gray, where we're not really getting responses, or we're supposed to feel the way we feel, and Andy isn't necessarily going to direct Kyle and be a little bit more confrontational or push back in a different way. And there was a moment later on in part three when he's asking about how the cast feels about Kyle and Morgan's relationship. And the edit of the cast members, to me, feels like seemingly everyone left, frankly, on those couches seemed uncomfortable with sharing their opinion. Do I think Crystal is the only one on the cast to suspect that Kyle and Morgan may have had some sort of romantic relationship? No, I think there were certainly more people. I know Dorit followed up with like, well, I felt a certain way looking at social, but the way that we are supposed to seemingly believe, I don't know. It's like the edit made me feel a little confused because, again, the pressure with some of these reaction shots is for us to act as, I guess, a surrogate for ourselves of like, here is maybe an example of people not feeling comfortable answering the question, but seemingly having a physical reaction. But then why isn't Andy following up? I do think that obviously the temperature in the room changed when Sutton and Garcelle were gone. And it was, to me, obviously not helpful. Sutton had a serious medical issue. She's talked about it since, that she was diagnosed, if I'm remembering this correctly, with dehydration and exhaustion. And she has said that production was with her in the ER, that Garcelle was with her the entire time. Now, that is true friendship. Garcelle, as we saw in talking to members of production, was genuinely concerned for Sutton. The fact that she got changed, went with her to the hospital, it really tells you something about the genuine friendship that these women have. I think had they been on the couch, this is one of those things where I do feel like, for the purposes of drama, the purposes of making sure this is three parts, they were stretching out, they were stretching out some of the real questions we wanted to hear answered about Mauricio, about Morgan, until part three. Obviously, unbeknownst to anyone, there would be a medical crisis that took place that meant that two voices, two incredibly important voices, especially in speaking for members of the audience who have questions, who might have frustration about stuff that's not discussed, wasn't discussed during the season. When you take those voices away, the temperature in the room is going to shift. But that's where I felt like I wish Andy had picked up some of that on their behalf. He knows better than anyone else the ways that Sutton and Garcelle's absence is going to affect certainly the questions he's going to ask. But I felt like from an energetic perspective, when Kyle says, you know, it's no one's fucking business, or whatever the specific quote was, whatever the correct phrasing is, that there had been some sort of response of like, right, but you signed up for reality TV. We're here at the great moments that we've shown of your relationship. Obviously, they packaged that teaser to ensure tears would be shed. It was, to me, incredibly meaningful and also heartbreaking in a sense, that they were pushing for this moment of some sort of emotional response. And I wish that there had been a little bit more, not insensitivity on Andy's part, but just a little bit more tension in saying, we're not going to rely only on the pause. We're not going to rely only on the quiet. That when you say it's nobody's business, saying that on a couch while filming a reality TV show that has been with you in the highs and lows. It's like you think about vows people make to each other in marriage, that I'll be with you for richer or poorer, for better and worse. And often that's a similar dynamic in terms of reality TV, certainly in terms of Real Housewives, which does have a vested interest and access in looking at people's marriages and their relationships in the highs and the lows. It feels inequitable to focus on maybe rumors and tension. We saw the flashbacks to the whole tabloid magazine cover stuff, which featured Kyle's tense conversations with Brandy and LVP and all of that. But we never really got into the nitty gritty. And some of that was because we were being told there was no nitty gritty, that this is like, you know, it's all rumors and speculation. Well, now we have a season. We're obviously going into it. Kyle had an understanding with Mauricio that they were separating, that there was a serious rupture in her relationship. And this is one of the difficulties of like, there is a vow here. There's some sort of agreement or understanding, just like what Andy said to Jen Aden, that when you go on reality TV, sure, you can certainly hide things from your life. That is a human instinct. But reality TV, more often than not, is going to reveal those secrets. That like the reality of reality TV is often the framework of these seasons is on those bonus reunion episodes we no longer really get, called Secrets Revealed. So what does it mean that it's nobody's business when we're at the worst part of For Better and For Worse? If it's not the business of people watching a reality TV show about someone's real life, not just to necessarily get answers to questions, but also to allow for questions to be asked, then what are we doing to even the dramatic tension that should exist here? It felt like everyone was nervous and a little hesitant about pissing off Kyle. Ironically, I'm not comparing or equalizing the two, but there's an argument Kyle makes over and over again about people not wanting to upset Kathy because they want to be invited to parties. Well, what's the cast's reaction when asked difficult questions about Kyle's relationship? How honest are people being? Is it because they don't want to piss off Kyle? Because the biggest party is being on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? I don't have an answer to that question. I do feel like, my humble take, I don't think it's a rare one, that we were as close as we are going to get until a potential announcement is made that Kyle and Mauricio are not getting back together. Kyle herself discussed that in like, listen, we're dancing around the word divorce here at the reunion, but like if he's moving out, that's not a great indicator. And I've only watched the extended version, which maybe is great or not so much, because I'm not sure what scenes were cut from the original episode that I saw in the extended version on Peacock. But there is a moment that Kyle addressed, and I don't know if this is on the regular version that aired or just on Peacock, where she's talking about the awkwardness involving that kiss with Mauricio. And she's talking, you know, Andy asks her, why did you say, you know, don't kiss me like that in that scene, which I think most of us remember and potentially, unfortunately, remember well, of Mauricio going in for a kiss with Kyle and her seemingly recoiling, that she feels physically uncomfortable, or I at least saw that physical discomfort. And her reaction is to say, well, we hadn't talked to our daughters, so I'm thinking while filming that we have 6 months or whatever in which we need to discuss with our kids the fact that we are separating. But essentially, he knew better. He knew that we did not have that kind of relationship. And while we are trying to play off maybe some of the realities of a relationship that's seemingly coming apart in front of cameras and we're trying to act like everything is okay, he knew that it wasn't okay. He felt differently in trying to prove to cameras and maybe everything else and maybe other people as well that things were fine. And as a result, and this is my wording here, he took something that he shouldn't have. And I do think that that was a crossing of boundaries from Mauricio of kissing her and being physically intimate with her in a way that he knew that she did not want. And that was a little bit of a aha moment for me. You could argue, oh, they're married. They've been married for 28 years. Why can't he go in for a kiss with his wife? I think the reality is he knew in understanding that their relationship was different. The fact that she can make jokes about how many tattoos, words are hard, how many tattoos she has and the fact that he hasn't noticed because he hasn't seen her body tells you that something has changed in their dynamic. And there's just something about that and knowing that Mauricio just in that moment went in for a kiss with someone that he should not be kissing in that way just made me feel a little cringe, honestly, on his behalf, because it's just like, sir, if you want to pretend that everything's fine, well, I don't know your dancing skill on Dancing with the Stars because I didn't watch it, but fuck, man, you're not going to be joining Chicago next. Let's say that. I don't think acting is in Mauricio's future. Although, who knows, based on whatever the fuck he was doing in their marriage and in their relationship, which continues to be a little bit of a question. Although, while we didn't get specifics of like, what is the thing that happened? You know, Kyle, what's the thing that happened that you discussed in that confessional at the last episode that we saw post separation announcement, what actually happened when it came to trust? She said during the reunion, I don't want to discuss it. You know, she's referencing her kids. She doesn't want to share that kind of information. But I mean, I literally out loud when watching that episode was like, he fucked somebody else. Like, I don't know how else to put it, I didn't necessarily think that that is what led to the breakdown of their relationship. I thought, as Kathy remarked on, she might have gotten the timeline wrong, according to Kyle, of how many years their relationship was kind of in a little bit of a question mark. I did think that the sudden and devastating loss of Lorene, of Kyle's best friend, led to her confronting maybe some of the realities of not only how she was going to react to her life, but like the present state of her life, her relationships, her dynamics with people. But it sounds like while aspects of that certainly may be true, that there was something else here that was some sort of inciting incident. And I don't know. Did I think that there was like some sort of Instagram component, him reaching out, maybe getting too friendly with people? Sure. And Kyle discussed that on the reunion as well on part three. But also, it seems like something happened, some sort of line was crossed with him physically with someone else, or he went too far, did something, betrayed her trust. And in Kyle's words, she thought that their relationship would go back to the way it did, and it just didn't. And there's a piece here that's missing for me. And this might be because I'm single, ready to mingle, but it might be because I've never been married. I don't have kids. And this might be sort of Pollyanna-ish on my part, but I'm watching their relationship play out on this season of Beverly Hills. And I'm just thinking to myself, why is this man not fighting for his wife? And that might be because prior to filming this season, there had been some sort of understanding or conversation that that wasn't where the relationship was heading. That like, he's not going to fight now because he knows that maybe there's no point. But did he ever? Like, I'm not getting that either. And maybe that's also because we're not getting a ton of specifics here. So let's say for the sake of an argument, for argument's sake, one could also say that something happened. Mauricio potentially had some sort of affair or betrayed Kyle's trust, being in some sort of relationship or dynamic or something with someone who was not Kyle in some sort of romantic sexual sense, in whatever way. I would assume that as a result of that, and Kyle feeling like her trust had been broken, that this man would fight for his wife. And it probably doesn't help us that at this point in their relationship, which is a point of conversation from other people in the cast who Kyle will light into for asking questions that seem fairly obvious to a viewer watching her relationship with Mauricio, watching it in ways that, you know, one could argue Sutton and Garcelle didn't even get a chance to see. They're going off of Kyle's responses to things. They're not even seeing the day-to-day with Kyle and Mauricio that we're seeing, where it becomes even more apparent that something is seriously off. But at what point in their relationship did whatever dynamic happen where Kyle felt like her trust was broken? How did Mauricio respond to that? It does not feel like this man has made any concessions in what he wants to do. And it feels like he has focused on continuing to do the thing that he knows is going to bring them financial success and security, his own place in the world, his own continued success. I frankly wish that Kathy had been able to finish her sentences, but Kyle kept cutting in and saying, "We're not going to talk about business. I don't want to do that." How unfortunate for Kathy, honestly, because then Mauricio goes on his reality TV show on Netflix, Breaking Bad or whatever the fuck it's called, Breaking Umansky, and is talking about the fact that he felt like he was poorly treated by Rick, a clip that Paris Hilton saw when she took to Instagram this week and referenced his show as lame, and said essentially, you know, keep my dad's name out of your mouth. But it feels like Mauricio has always seemingly claimed his territory and his land, and I guess his ownership in his own success. And, you know, the agency is a huge, huge success in many ways because of how it was created, with name recognition from Beverly Hills at that point Mauricio being a beloved, you know, house husband, one that many of us thought was like a hunk of burn in love. But now we're seeing this Mauricio for the last several years who maybe has been a little goofy, maybe has been a little out to lunch, maybe has been a little cruel and at points annoying. I mean, we've also seen other parts of him, like when he ripped into Brandy. I forget what season that was. I'm going to pull it out of my ass and say three, but that might not be accurate, in a way that made me very uncomfortable with how he was speaking to her and treating her, regardless of the opinion that he had. It felt like he went a little bit too far. And now I'm just wondering to myself, like, sir, you know your relationship is in crisis, seemingly because of your behavior. At what point, how did you change or adjust your behavior to win back your wife? Were they both trusting in what Kyle said during the reunion, that she just assumed or hoped that their relationship would be repaired? That's not, to my understanding, how relationships work after infidelity. And I remember listening to, I forget if it was on Jeff Lewis Live, shout out Chumps, or on something else, but I was listening to someone who was, I think, like a psychologist or something working in the mental health field, who was counseling someone who had been dealing with infidelity in their relationship. And the person who had been talking was not the one who cheated, but was the partner of someone who did. And the advice that they were given in response was essentially like, your old relationship, the one that you had until this point, no longer exists. If you want to fight for this relationship and this marriage, you need to begin again. And that's sort of a confronting response. I mean, I think that's a tough thing to potentially hear, but I understand it as a reaction. The idea that, like, you cannot assume you are going to immediately return or return at some point later on, maybe with all the time in the world, to the dynamic that you were in before. Maybe that it certainly could be a possibility for people in relationships. Any number of things can happen. You know, we've heard housewives talk on the show about the ways that their marriages have potentially been strengthened after, it doesn't necessarily mean infidelity, but potentially after a moment of great tension and angst in their relationship, that they were able to work through it. But I did think there was something interesting in thinking about essentially having to restart and reset because you're a different person now. You're a different person. You might look at your partner differently than you did before. The trust is broken. The faith is potentially greatly harmed. So how do you reset in that way? I wonder if Mauricio ever reset. I wonder if he even thought about that as a possibility or something he was responsible to do. I don't know how Mauricio views trust. It feels like, you know, he's been given the opportunity on his new godforsaken Netflix show and on Housewives to certainly center how he feels he was treated by Rick Hilton and by, I guess, other people that he worked with during his time at Hilton and Highland. He's been able to share his opinion. We never really got to see Rick's reaction because, you know, Kathy wasn't at that point on the show. And frankly, for the sake of their relationship, thank God for that, because I think had this been at the absolute forefront of talking about all of this stuff, and at that point, had Kyle's sisters been on the show at that point, I don't think that they would have been able to get through this. It just would have become so, so big. But I wonder who Kyle was protecting when she said, I don't, you know, kind of want to get into this. I don't want to get into the business of it. Because for the purposes of talking about these vulnerable moments and maybe some of these secrets being revealed, or at least there being a little bit of a pushback from someone who also was in this dynamic, I understand her wanting to fight to protect her kids, but it is also kind of odd to see her silence what is a likely a strong critique of Mauricio himself, because I think he deserves it. I think that there is some kind of pushback that can be said. And also, we're sort of treating this man like he's still working on a startup. If his reputation is hurt in some way, I mean, it's again easy for me to say because I don't have the burden as Kyle feels that she has, as she has, of wanting to protect her kids from their father, maybe secrets relating to their father being exposed. But he's been helped a lot by the reputation and ways that we have understood him for over a decade. So if there is a pushback either on the reality that he presented or on an opinion he can now further on his own goddamn show, I wish that there was a little bit more of a window into like other aspects of Mauricio that aren't the fun, smiley guy that just wants to get along. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Erin and your life and mine.
I will never understand for the rest of my life why he went on Dancing with the Stars. Like, I appreciated Kyle saying, you know, had we not been at this state that we are in our marriage, I wouldn't have wanted him to go on because I would have been jealous of his, I assume his, she meant his relationship with a potential dancer who was paired with. I don't think she was like jealous of the celebrity that he would accrue by doing the Foxtrot on a Tuesday night. I think that there was something to be said about how grave the state of their relationship was, that she understood that, like, it doesn't matter to me anymore. Even though obviously she was also impacted and affected by him, like, holding hands with his dance partner, which he tried to play off, I think, rather poorly. And these are some of those moments where, like, Erica's cutting in, being like, well, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't give a shit. And, you know, when you're dancing the Foxtrot, your pelvises are on top of each other, so none of it matters. Erica has a different understanding of jealousy, connection, or intimacy in her relationship. So I don't know that Erica's, while it's helpful to hear Erica's opinion, I don't think anyone's surprised that she wouldn't give a shit if her partner was on Dancing with the Stars. Or maybe she meant, I don't give a shit in how I act on Dancing with the Stars because I know my husband won't, because I guess he was out to lunch at that point. He was checked out of their relationship. He didn't read the book. So I don't entirely think that it's apples to apples and comparing Erica's opinions of what performing, also Erica's a performer, so it's like she gets it in a way where she's thinking about this like, I'm a professional, you know, it's you're putting on a show. Erica also put on a show throughout her marriage as well, so she has a different kind of take on this than Kyle does. I appreciate Kyle saying, you know, I would have been jealous, and I also understand her in saying why she no longer feels that way. She's still going to be hurt. She's still married to this man, but I don't think that I don't know how much longer he's going to be living in the house. It sounds like there's an understanding that when he moves out, he is the one that's going to leave. I don't know about Kyle's future on the show. I assume that she'll continue, but I do think there is a genuine question mark. And I think if she does continue, there needs to be some sort of push and pushback with some of this Morgan stuff next season. Because the way that she's describing it, Kathy's face during some of these responses that she's given, I was often looking at Kathy while Kyle was responding to try to get to more of the truth. Because Kathy, God bless her, is not as filtered as Kyle. She might be trying to positioning a perspective on their relationship and their sisterhood, certainly, but she is, to me, more of a window into the truth of the matter. And maybe that's also helpful being an outsider and also having access in the way that she does. She gets to see Kyle and Morgan when they're not being followed by the Daily Mail or possibly calling Backgrid for some sort of Google Cal paparazzi moment in Aspen. Like, she is able to see them together. And I don't totally have a sense here that Kyle is being open and forthright while also acting shocked and annoyed that other cast members would have a question. If we're going off of how Kyle has described their relationship, which has been cagey at best, why would you then assume or feel that it is wild and completely, like, insane for cast members to have questions about your relationship? Like, the fact that Crystal was the only one who was like, I don't know, things seemed confusing in watching your dynamic, because it was, and Kyle refused to be forthright in giving an answer. Yeah, that's how people are going to feel confused. I don't think it's on that person. Seeing someone seemingly refuse to
give a straight answer about the status or nature of their relationship, you could say Kyle has the absolute right to keep some of this private, but then I don't know that she also has the right to act shocked and upset that other people are going to have questions because she hasn't provided an answer. And that to me was a lot of the framework for this episode. Also, I thought that the Kyle Sutton of it all was going to continue. The fact that that like ended fairly quickly into part three made me a little confused about what we were going to watch in advance of the episode. And obviously we had an understanding from press that had come out, from the trailer itself, that there was going, from the fact that, you know, Page Six was reporting that, you know, weeks ago that Sutton was taken to the hospital, we had an understanding that some aspect of this was going to be cut short as a result of Sutton's medical emergency. Now, there are many ways to respond to that in the moment. I thought that several of the members of the cast responded well. This is also, maybe I'll, you know, throw a little bone here and say, I don't know the timing of all of this. I don't know how long members of the cast were crowded around Sutton before Erica is asking Kathy, or the reverse, like, how you've been, how have you been good? Is your tree still up? I don't know when the Christmas tree conversation took place in timing around Sutton's medical emergency, or Kathy, I maybe making jokes, or I don't even know if it was a joke. Like Kathy saying, like, it's just a hot flash, you'll be fine. Did Kathy actually think Sutton was having a hot flash and was reacting in that way? Also, when people hear, which, you know, the episode didn't, episode ended with like, Sutton's with Avi, she's fine, she's with the puppy, she's recovering. But it never gave clarity on what her medical, the specifics of what she was going through at that point, which she has said later on recently was that she was dealing with dehydration and exhaustion. You might hear that and think like, dehydration and exhaustion, just get some sleep and drink some water. And I can tell you, as someone who's talked about this at length after it happened on Andy Scrolls, we're coming up on 2 years in May, having almost died of hyponatremia because I went for a walk one day. It was very hot. And turns out I have some imbalances with how my body processes like vitamins, nutrients, most importantly, sodium, aka electrolytes, that can be life-threatening when I become dehydrated. And as a result, I was paraseizure, having stroke symptoms, delirium, went to the hospital, woke up a day and a half later in the ICU, was told by the nephrologist who has now been, you know, handling my care since I was released from the ICU, that I had a 90% chance of dying had I not called 911 while I was still physically able to. I mean, there were things that I was getting flashbacks from when I was watching the way Andy or someone in the cast was like, lay down, like sit down, you know, put on slippers, whatever else. And I remember when I called 911 that they were like, one of the first things they did was like, was saying was like, what are you wearing? And I was wearing a skirt and they were like, unzip it because you want your body. Listen, medical professionals can explain this much better than I can, but like the idea of not wanting anything constricting to exist on your body. So the idea of like her taking off her shoes or whatever, putting on, I think all of that is 100% smart. Also, Garcelle giving her a banana was important, potassium, everything else. But I'm also thinking like, give her salt. Noting that I'm not a medical professional. And if you have, you know, what she was experiencing with high blood pressure, I'm not going to be advising her to do anything. But I, as a result of hyponatremia and actually finally getting diagnosed with what I had been dealing with after several years of sort of unexplained illnesses, knowing that I had a heat intolerance, but not knowing what and why and how to react to it, among other neurological symptoms and everything else, I now carry with me, I'm looking at it as I record, I now carry with me a tumbler. I did get it in black for Paris to fit in, although I was surrounded by all of the French people in the world. No one in Paris
walks and drinks or walks and eats at the same time. And so I had a little black tumbler fitting in with my all black ensemble that I have filled with the Holy Grail in Paris to find ice. So I always have a sodium electrolyte solution with me at all times because I am in the category of people, you know, you hear of people who need like a low salt diet. That is the opposite for me. I need as much salt and sodium as a person can possibly have because of the nature of my medical situation, which I don't go into specifics of what I was diagnosed with and decline sharing that. But that is something that I learned as a result of being dehydrated. And I had no idea. I always thought that when a person is dehydrated, give them water. It was only after that specific episode that I found out that like even the electrolyte solution that had been recommended to me by a prior doctor wasn't right because it didn't include sodium. Because unbeknownst to them, I had a sodium imbalance. So the thing that I always recommend to people, including when I'm cheering people on the side of the street on New York City Marathon Day, which I always think of as New York City Christmas, because everyone comes together and it's incredible, is like, if you feel dehydrated, you know, Gatorade Zero is your best friend. Like, don't just drink water because that can actually dilute electrolytes that might need to be replenished. So that's the Grey's Anatomy of it all, Sarah journey. But the long and short of it is I'm very, very grateful that Garcelle was there and I was a slightly like oy vey about Kathy writing all of it off. But I do think that that is something that people also do in hearing or thinking or seeing someone who might be reacting to dehydration or exhaustion or something else. That can be physically dangerous and also life-threatening for people. It is not something to play with. It's something that I unfortunately had to learn the hard way. And exhaustion is a huge part of that because that can also trigger, for me at least, neurological symptoms. So it's different ways that we have to take care of ourselves. And I'm sorry that Sutton's example had to be on set of a TV show. And I can't even think of how hot that set must have been, the lights and everything. We saw Garcelle talking to the producer and saying she's been, you know, Garcelle was obviously very, very concerned for her and rightfully so. And the way she was saying, like, she's just pushing herself and pushing herself. And sometimes our bodies just reach a breaking point. And what we were able to handle and deal with maybe for years before, potentially even decades, you just simply can't do any longer. Your body is just sending out a signal of like, beep, beep, beep. I can't go further in this. We need to recorrect. And so I'm thankful that it appears that Sutton is doing a lot better. I still won't get over that Christmas tree line, though. Oh, my God. There is like, I mean, it was an LOL moment, I do have to say. Like, is your tree still up? Like, this woman is like literally not in control of herself on the other couch. And you're like, is your tree still up? It's just of all of the things to have in some sort of like nothing conversation, nothing burger kind of conversation. Also, Kathy saying I was about to go after her next. Well, this is where I wish we had some sort of secrets revealed. I'm curious what she meant about that. I assume it's about Sutton saying that she had received a phone call where Kathy yelled at her about feeling like she hadn't been supported or defended or whatever was going on at that point. And then Sutton saying to Kyle, you know, like, I know I understand better now, maybe aspects of your relationship. We'll never get that moment again, but maybe it's for the best. Cause I do think that Sutton and Kathy are actually okay. And Kathy seemed vulnerable, like really emotionally vulnerable at points. Like she was, I don't know if it was from nervousness or tension or just genuine upset, the way that she seemed to be sort of breaking down at points in talking about maybe her relationship with Kyle, her relationship with other people in the cast. This whole thing with Rinna, I find very odd of Rinna wanting to heal their relationship. I just look at Rinna, I'm like, what's in it for Rinna with this? Like, why now? Is it because Rinna doesn't have the show to fall back on, or maybe she wants to get invited to those parties? I don't think it's the latter, but I did have a feeling that for Kathy, a lot of what brought her comfort in the way that she and Kyle were able to
start to heal and repair their relationship after attending, while attending Kim's daughter's wedding. Like the fact that the fact that Kathy started to like break down and cry when she's talking about hearing Kyle in the hair salon with there's no music or anyone else saying like, oh my gosh, that's my sister, and wanting to be with her. That for Kathy, a lot of this ultimately is like feeling included and not feeling excluded, like feeling like she's a part of this dynamic and a part of Kyle's life in that way. I also do think for Kathy, you know, when she talked about the difficulties or maybe denied greater difficulties or longer standing difficulties in her relationship with Kyle, I did sort of have a sense that for Kathy, I think to Kathy, maybe obedience is a part of love. Like the way that she thought of Kyle maybe being disobedient as not being as loving and supportive as a sister. Which does also beg the question of the Big Kathy of it all. I mean, we talk about Big Kathy, about their mom, in terms of like how happy she would be to see her kids heal their relationship. But hot dog, literally, who am I? I'm in the 1960s recording this episode. This is what New England does to me. Goodness gracious. that I do kind of wonder a little bit about the ways that Big Kathy created some of the, I guess, sister roles in their household growing up, which is something that we haven't examined in full or terribly closely on Housewives. That often, you know, the discussion around their mom has come up in like tension between Kyle and Kim of, you know, mom's no longer here and now I have to take care of you, and this like caregiver role. But we never really get into the nitty gritty of what life was like behind closed doors in a way that I personally, selfishly would think or do think is very fascinating to potentially hear about. But it doesn't seem like that's anything that's realistic that I think Kyle is and Kathy and Kim are on the other side of what has been simmering tension. Not to say that that no longer exists in their dynamic, but I just feel like a weight has been lifted with the Richard sisters, and it does feel like they have been, for an extended period of time at this point, able to find ways to like care for each other without crossing lines, which I think is positive. I really genuinely do. You know, I think it was a soft episode. I think it was a softer landing to the season than what I was hoping for. I do wish that there had been some kind of breakthrough, that we would have learned more, had more specific sort of an understanding of what was going on with Kyle and Mauricio. It is wild after 13 seasons that that genuinely might not exist. And as I said earlier in this episode, I don't know what Kyle's future on Beverly Hills is going to be like. I don't know. I feel like it's like 60-40 she'll return. I would like to say 70-30, but I don't know that that's real. I don't think it would be the worst idea in the world for her to take a pause. And I say that for the millionth time as someone who has Kyle in my top five. But I do think maybe with time and with a little bit of having a little bit more room, she will be able to share more about what happened in the breakdown of her relationship with Mauricio. I would genuinely love that. I think a lot of people would. I wonder how Mauricio will interact with Kyle if she is to return. Like season 14, is he going to film? Is he going to talk more about, is he going to allow for her to be honest in conversation with him where he doesn't get to perform, where he doesn't get to play house and say that everything is fine when it is readily important now that we all know it really and truly is not? I don't know. It's interesting because the storytelling obviously is through Kyle's eyes, including in how she views Mauricio's behavior. And because he has taken to his show, I guess, to share more of his perspective, but hasn't done that on Beverly Hills, wouldn't we be so fortunate to see both happen at once, where we're seeing Mauricio be a little bit more honest and forthright about the reality of what they're experiencing now that they no longer feel like they have to shield this from the kids. Some of this Kyle is still going to want to protect for the kids, but at least now that they are being more transparent and honest with themselves and with us, with outsiders, that they're separated and he's moving out. I mean, I would hope for there to be, if Kyle stays on the show, I would hope for there to be a little bit more focus and emphasis on understanding exactly how Kyle feels and understanding exactly the dynamics in which Kyle feels a certain way. Because at the end of the day, this is Kyle's story. We're hearing about Mauricio. We're seeing Mauricio. It's through the lens of storytelling. It's through the lens sometimes of like creative tension and also existing tension and also exacerbating tension for storytelling purposes. But if Mauricio is now getting a platform in which to share his opinion and that platform isn't on Housewives, I wish we could have a little bit more focus, at least on Kyle's reaction to some of that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think that that's important, that like specificity is key here and a little bit more honesty. And, you know, Kyle gets upset at Kathy for Kathy's responses to Kyle's behavior, but then Kyle continues that kind of behavior and getting upset at members of the cast for their responses to what they feel like is the reality of a situation. And, you know, Kyle began the episode saying she was asking for compassion from Sutton, but I didn't feel a sense from Kyle that she had empathy for Sutton. And maybe some of that is stuff that we'll get into in the upcoming season if Kyle's back. I don't know. It was like a little bit of a, oh God, it's like Nothing Burger does come to mind a little bit, but there was stuff there, but it wasn't the big event that maybe would have rocked the franchise or rocked the cast if it had happened to maybe any other person but Kyle. If this had been a Dorit and PK situation, I think the season would have gone very differently. The reunion itself, at least, would have gone very differently than the way it did with what we watched. But now it's over. Beverly Hills is done. We have allegedly Potomac, which I'm extremely far behind in and absolutely desperately need to catch up because I do want to watch the reunion as close to being in real time as humanly possible. And then a little bit of a break. Miami's done. New Jersey is on the horizon. You can hear my live reaction to that on a Patreon episode that's up where I get into the nitty gritty of all things the future and present state of New Jersey and whether or not the reality reckoning impacted some of that trailer edit in ways that I think it did. And we have some stuff to look forward to in the future of franchises to come. As said on recent earlier episodes of AG and certainly on social, I don't plan to watch Dubai. If I do, I don't know that I'm going to cover it on the episode. I've been really kind of, as many people have, horrified at some of the social from members of the cast, which I feel bad about because I love Chanel Ayan and Caroline Stanberry. I thought was kind of a flop last season, but I'm curious. That will figure itself out in the next one. I don't know. That might be a game day decision of whether or not I, normalize changing your mind based on new information. And some of that information might be this episode looks good, but that's kind of a journey that I'll decide to take on my own time. And there's so much that I want to catch up on. Like, I need to catch up on Vanderpump Rules. I need to catch up on Summer House. So I'm excited to deep dive that since we do have a little bit of a soft period
at least for a couple weeks when it comes to, or several weeks when it comes to new Housewives content in addition to Potomac. So I'm excited to do that because there are some, when it comes to like relationship conversations, friendships, stakes, certainly that's happening not only on Summer House, but obviously on Vanderpump Rules. So look for that in upcoming episodes of Andy's Girls. And let me know your thoughts on all things Kyle in the social media for this episode. Your feeling about how you felt like the part three landed, your hopes for what season 14 might look at, your review of season 13 in general. I have heard from people who've said that I was maybe more optimistic or engaged in this season than others watching. And I certainly understand why people feel like this season might have been somewhat of a flop. I just felt differently in watching it. And I have to be honest about that. I was pretty engaged. I was like very much down for some of the season just because I found myself really curious about what it was that we were shown. Did part three land for me in a way that was like, wow, this is groundbreaking? Absolutely not. But there was still apparently, according to this episode, a couple things to be said. So listen, let me know your thoughts and feels about part three, about this recap, all that and more on Instagram at Dame Galley. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon, number one way to support the pod, get exclusive bonus episodes, and so much more. And I do also need to shout out friend of the pod and also IRL, Michael Arsenault, whose third book launched this week. It's called I Finally Bought Some Jordans. I started it on the train here to Rhode Island. I was crying on both dedication pages, and then the book began. It's funny and smart and incredibly meaningful. And of course, I encourage you to listen to Michael's episodes of AG because I love and think his voice is singular and important, but also certainly feel as a little bit of a hashtag writer girl that it's important to support our AG guests and certainly our writers. And so if you're interested in getting that book, it's available certainly at the local independent bookstore near you and at the independent Amazon pickup drop off point at any Whole Foods or whatever. That little kind of corner store that could. So mazel of the day to Michael, and thanks to all of you for listening. And we, by we, I mean royal we, will chat with you soon. Bye bye.